All right, welcome to Crossover Wednesday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are bringing you a special crossover between Locked On Jaguars and Locked On Jets. We always abbreviate Locked On Jaguars to LOJ, so LOJ times two. Welcome back to the show. My name is Zach Goodall. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter at Zach underscore Goodall, as well as my co-host Chris Thornton. You can find him at Misto Christopher. Chris, as always, say what's up to the people.
We were alive, and although I'm barely alive from that Titans game from heat stroke and whatnot, Zach was very much alive in his air-conditioned living room.
I was still sick, so watch what you say. But I have recovered from that. Hopefully my voice sounds a little bit better coming over these airwaves as we get ready for this special crossover. We're going to be breaking down this upcoming Jaguars versus New York Jets game, second Jags versus New York game in the first 4 weeks of the year. This time taking place at home. They took on the Giants in the Meadowlands. However, this time the Jets will be coming to Jacksonville to take on the Jaguars. And to break down this game as part of the crossover, we have John Butchko of Gangrene Nation joining us today to do the Locked On crossover. So, John, how's it going? Give everyone a little plug with some of the work you do, where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, well, it's great to be here with some LOJ friends. Obviously I host the Locked On Jets podcast 5 days a week here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and I also am the manager of gangrenenation.com, the SB Nation site that covers the Jets. So we give you the spoken word and we give you the written word, cover breaking down all things New York Jets.
And we love to have you on. Make sure to go check that out during the week if you guys are looking for any Jets related content. Always trying to get as many people from the network involved, get all their stuff, all the clicks heading their way as well as our own way. So go check out gangrenenation.com. Check out some of the Locked On Jets podcasts for, I'm sure, a lot of, information, context that you will want heading into this game, as well as subscribe on iTunes to the Locked On Jaguars podcast, as well as Google Play, Spotify, anywhere you can find podcasts. And check out the website as well, lockedonjaguars.com. Got a lot of content come over to that way. So this is going to be a, I'd really hope, more exciting game for the Jaguars after their 9-6 loss from the Tennessee Titans, a game that only consisted of field goals. The Jaguars offense looked so down compared to their game against New York, where everything just seemed to be firing. You'd hope that they can bring that back against this Jets defense that, at least on paper, before the year started, did not appear to be very much of a pass rushing team. And we're going to break down those matchups. And the same thing comes from the Jets side. They have a rookie quarterback in Sam Darnold in there who doesn't seem to be afraid to actually, test defenses and let the ball rip rather than being ultra conservative with it. That just is the same type of guy you saw on tape when he was coming out of college. So we'll be breaking down all of the key matchups that you need to know. But John, I'll go ahead and start by asking you, who are three players that Jaguars fans need to get to know a little bit before this game starts on Sunday?
Well, I think, if you look on the offensive side of the ball, a guy to know is Quincy Enunwa, who has kind of emerged as the Jets' top receiver this year. 2 years ago, he was kind of his breakout year in a Jets offense that was not very good. He was pretty productive. He's a guy who's kind of a hybrid. He's not really a wide receiver. He's not really a tight end. He's not really a running. He's listed as a receiver in the program. But he's a guy who's got he run when he's got the ball in his hands, he's kind of tough to bring down like a running back. He's got the size, he's got some blocking ability, not quite as big as a tight end, but he's kind of emerged as the go-to guy in this passing offense for the Jets. And he was a guy you did not see last year because he suffered an injury during training camp. So when these teams played week four last year, he was not a guy you saw in the lineup. You look to the defensive side of the ball, a guy who you may be familiar with since he came from the AFC South, Avery Williamson, who put up a monster game Thursday night against Cleveland. I think he had 14 tackles, 1.5 sacks. He was one of the big Jets free agent acquisitions this offseason. So he's a guy they'll look to build on that performance, kind of help stop the run game. And as long as we're talking about free agent acquisitions, I think the most important, the most significant free agent acquisition the Jets made this year was bringing in Trumaine Johnson from the LA Rams. He's a guy who's, you know, fairly well known in the NFL. He, again, he was their big addition. The Jets defense, you know, Todd Bowles, if he had his choice, he'd be a guy who runs an attack style defense, lots of blitzing, which means his corners have to hold up one-on-one. Johnson's the guy who usually draws the top receiver on the other team. So those are the three guys I'd give you. Inunua on offense, on defense, Williamson, Johnson.
Now, John, I don't want to have to ask this question, but I have to ask this question. How did it feel, just kind of from the fan base perspective and your kind of your guys' perspective, because I know the team was pretty confident going into the Thursday night game, how does it feel to be the Browns' first victory, I guess, in almost over 2 years? Just kind of, does that kind of send the city into shock? Does it send the fan base into shock? Or is everybody just kind of motivated? Because I know this Tennessee loss kind of threw Jacksonville into a little bit of pandemonium for about 24 hours. So I'm sure New York's probably feeling a whole whirlwind of emotions.
Yeah, I think frustrating. And as much as it's the fact that the Jets were the first team to lose to the Cleveland Browns in, what, 630-something days, it's the way they did it as much as anything, where they just did not play smart football. They took a couple really dumb penalties. You had one route right before the half, Terrell Pryor just quit on a route on a big third down play. The fact Baker Mayfield, who, look, is the number one, was the number one overall pick, a talented guy, Heisman Trophy winner last year. So, you know, not a guy who's a scrub. You know, he's a talented guy, but have him come off the bench, a rookie come off the bench in his first action, lead a comeback against you, I think as much as it's losing to the Browns. Now, look, the Browns are an improved team this year. This is a team with a much higher talent level than the team that went 0-16 last year, 1-15 2 years ago. But I think as much as anything, it's just the type of game that makes you question a lot of people, is this the right coaching staff? Because it's one thing to lose to the Cleveland Browns on a Thursday night. It's another to lose like that. So I think it's frustrating how you got to that loss. So I guess I'll kind of come back with you guys, ask the same question. You have this great win week two over the Patriots. And I mean, after that game, I really thought the Jaguars were the class of the AFC. And I still think that they're right there. They'll be right there with anybody. But how do you guys respond after, you know, losing it? I understand the divisional game. I understand the game, you know, the Titans were a playoff team last year, but how are you guys? How do you feel things are in Jacksonville right now? You know, going from the high of beating New England and really dominating New England to losing a game like that on Sunday.
I think this really brought the Jaguars and the fan base as a whole back down to earth. And people say that that was necessary. I'm not necessarily sure that losing is necessary, if you know what I mean by that. Because, like, obviously, like, the absolute goal is for a team to consistently win and not have to come back down from playing as well as they do. But it does happen. And, you know, Tennessee has had this team's number for a while. And I've been trying to break down the offense. The coach's film just became available, so I've been breaking that stuff down, posting it on Twitter. I'm about halfway through it. And it just looked so totally different that I'm not willing to say that it's going to be a consistent problem the way they played Tennessee. I think they tried to be as vanilla as possible in their passing concepts. They had an effective way to run the ball and they didn't utilize it. So I think they were trying to just, you know, play a boring game, try and play to win, not to lose. And much like when they did that against New England in the AFC Championship game, it came back to bite them. But, you know, it's a humbling aspect. The media is going to get quotes from the team saying, we're never going to lose two games in a row this year, I promise you. And I think that's going to give the team some drive. I think it's going to give the fan base some drive rather than kind of sitting on a high horse at this point. Because the Jaguars, they may have been the class of the AFC after week two, but at the same time, when were they ever the class of the AFC, like, ever? So I think it was humbling. I think it's something that, you know, maybe they can use as motivation going forward. I really hope they don't lose to Tennessee again later in the year. That would be embarrassing because that'd be the fourth time in a row that the Titans have beaten the Jags, and that's not ideal. but we'll just see how it goes. I'm really not too concerned with in terms of an X's and O's type of thing from that game.
And the Jaguars, I mean, they had some pretty big key guys out on offense, you know, namely Leonard Fournette, and I know they've been a little banged up on the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, last year, or really his entire career, fans would probably be, like, clapping at the fact that right guard A.J. Can was out. But all through camp this year, he's been really good, really stepped it up, has been solid through the first 2 weeks of the season. And then he was kind of a surprise inactive. I definitely wasn't expecting him to be inactive on game day. So when he was inactive, that was kind of a shock. They also had starting nickel cornerback D.J. Hayden out. That was also kind of a blow because, honestly, Hayden might have been their best defensive back playing through the first 2 weeks, making a lot of plays from that nickel spot. So it was definitely a blow to start that week, especially after losing Cam Robinson the week before with an ACL tear. But, I mean, just even with those injuries aside, they just performed not even close to the level they could have. Like Zach said, they played really vanilla. Didn't take any shots downfield really at all. I think they'd had one attempted pass beyond like 15 yards, which was completely contradictory to what they did the week before against New England. So it was just a combination of everybody not really performing to how they should.
And I can tell you the Jets have been relatively lucky on the injury front this year, except for there's one big exception, and that's Marcus May, who was the safety they took in the second round last year out of Florida. And it's been kind of a surprise because he suffered an ankle injury week 17 last year against New England, the last game of the season, which was really a meaningless game for the Jets. And it seems like he was on track to return. Now he's been missed, and it seems like this is a separate injury. He sat out the first three games, and the Jets have been, it's been very mysterious. Nobody really knows what's going on with him. The Jets are very vague about whether he's coming back. And he's a guy I think the Jets have missed in the early going. The other safety they drafted last year, Jamal Adams, is off to a good start. But they have Doug Middleton in there playing now in place of May. And Middleton's had his moments, but May was just so solid for most of last year in the back of the defense. He was the guy who played single high most of the time. He's a guy the Jets have missed, I think. And it's not really clear whether he's going to be better. Again, the Jets have been very vague. It's a very, very strange situation.
Yeah, and that's something in that I guess that comes kind of on the coaching aspect of it. And before we take a quick break and then dive into more of these matchups with the offenses and defenses, I did want to ask on top of the coaching part of this, there were rumors that Todd Bowles could potentially be on the hot seat. I forget where I saw it. It popped up on my timeline, but after the loss to Cleveland, there are already rumors out there. And that's been a discussion in the offseason's past. So even if it's not right now, how do you feel in terms of as a whole, where Todd Bowles sits with this team right now? Obviously, they let, what was it, John Morton? I think that's
John Morton.
Yeah, they let him go this past offseason. He was actually a guy that, when I would be able to catch a Jets game, I was intrigued by the West Coast type of passing concepts they had. When people were doing a lot of draft work throughout the 2017 season, people were linking Lamar Jackson or Baker Mayfield as, style fits into his type of offense. Obviously, he didn't stick around. Is there still a chopping block in terms of this coaching staff, and could Bowles be the next guy even before the season's over?
The Jets typically do not make moves in season. The team has indicated that's one of their philosophies, that they wait till the end of the season to make a move. So I don't think we'll see any move made in season. I think that Bowles' job is not necessarily secure beyond this year, but I don't think it's a playoffs or bust type scenario, because the Jets have told us that they're taking a longer view. They know that this is not necessarily a playoff roster this year. You're dealing with a rookie quarterback, a guy with a lot of potential, but a guy who is still a rookie. So I don't think it's the record as much as how do they get to that record. And if you see more performances where the Jets are losing games and they're looking undisciplined, they're blowing leads, they're playing sloppy, I think that's what could put Bowles in trouble. It's, you know, as I said when I was describing the Cleveland game, it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose like that, where the team just looks sloppy, where the team looks undisciplined. That's the type of stuff I think can reflect on a coach. And I think if the Jets go 6-10, 7-9, I think there's a scenario where Bowles stays. But if they go 6-10, 7-9, and these losses look like the one against Cleveland, then I think he could be in some trouble.
And that totally makes sense. He's been there for a couple of years now, obviously seen some down moments. But this team does have something that's obviously promising, that being the third overall pick in Sam Darnold. And I'm sure we're going to talk about him a lot more after this break. When we come back, we'll start breaking down some key matchups. We'll start things over on the Jets side of the ball versus this Jaguars defense.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out until 7 p.m., you get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON and add 25 at the end of it. If it's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner to take extra money. You play, you win, you get paid.
So diving in to the Jets offense, and there's certainly some talent here. I'm sure there's a lot more room for them to grow as well. Possibly looking into the running back trade market. There are rumors out there that the Jets are heavily interested in Le'Veon Bell, one of the three teams that have emerged as candidates if he is to be traded from the Pittsburgh Steelers. But they right now are currently fixated on third overall pick, who's been the starter since week one, and that is Sam Darnold out of the University of Southern California. What have you seen from him so far, John, as he's been starting for this team? He's a very, very young rookie. If I recall correctly, just turned 21 recently. They've got a guy in Josh McCown behind him who's a seasoned veteran, and they rolled the dice on playing the young guy early. What have you seen from him in terms of his traits that he brought from college? Has he been flashing them? Has he appeared to grow at all? Or what are still some of the concerns for him, especially going up against such a huge test in this Jaguars defense?
Well, I think, you know, one of the top concerns is just it's a rough early schedule for him. The Jets started with 3 games in 11 days. They began week one Monday Night Football, so you have a short week heading into week two, then another short week heading into week three, and now we head to Jacksonville, which, you know, may be the best defense in the NFL. When it comes to Darnold, I mean, he's a guy, I believe he led college football in turnovers last year, so he's a guy who's shown he's mistake-prone at times. There are lots of positive qualities, though. I mean, you look at some of the things he does at the age of 21, and it's really pretty incredible. Just the ability to, guy who looks safeties off, who, you know, knows how to hold defenders in the spot with his eyes. There was a touchdown, his first touchdown pass in the NFL. I watched that play over, and what I came to realize after watching the play 5 times was that It was a 41-yard touchdown to Robbie Anderson. Anderson was really a decoy on that play, and Darnold identified that there was a bust in coverage, even though his first read on that play was open. You know, he wasn't locked onto his first read. So you see, I mean, you see a lot of talent. You see his ability to process, and you know, maybe above all else, is just he just hasn't innate ability to extend plays with his legs, to keep his eyes down the field. You know, he's not – now, Thursday night, he was a little rattled by the pass rush, but he's a guy who, you know, is willing to stand in the pocket. He can move within the pocket. So, I mean, he looks rough around the edges at times. There are definitely moments where he looks like a rookie, where he makes some dumb decisions. But you also see the raw potential. I mean, he does things at 21 years old that most quarterbacks don't do at 21.
And you mentioned wide receiver Robbie Anderson. He kind of started busting onto the scene towards the end of last year. How has he looked this year? I know you mentioned his touchdown from Sam Darnold. Just kind of give me a little bit about how he's looking this year, things that maybe he can improve on going into this game against the Jaguars.
So how has he looked this year? In one word, bad. He really has not grown at all. He has 90 yards through three games, and the 41 of those came on that touchdown that I mentioned. He fumbled twice 2 weeks in a row. I mean, here's the problem with Anderson is he essentially is a guy who does one thing well. He runs deep routes well. He's a good deep route runner, and he tracks the ball well. So he's kind of a deep ball specialist. And I said this last year, even as he was producing a lot, he needed to develop his game more, because in the NFL, if you only do one thing well, the league catches up with you and the league can take away one thing. And, you know, even a guy Jets fans like to compare him to is DeSean Jackson. Well, DeSean Jackson's has been one of the most explosive players in the league with the ball in his hand. So, you know, if the defense sits back on DeSean Jackson, you know, he gets an 8-yard cushion. The quarterback can just dump him, throw him the ball, and Jackson can make a play. Anderson's not explosive with the ball in his hands. He's not a great route runner. So, I mean, he needs to develop his game a little bit more. You know, heading into this season, the Jets were counting on two young guys. I mentioned the one guy in Nunwa. Anderson was the other guy. The Jets were very excited about these two young receivers. But Nunwa has held up his end of the bargain and is off to a great start. Anderson really is not. And I think this is going to be an interesting test, because I think you guys know, I mean, I think the Jaguars just have a tremendous group of corners. I mean, that's as good of a group as you'll see in the league.
Now, one thing that the Jaguars defense has been doing a lot often, and it's led to guys, when you're watching, at least from a broadcast angle, and some fans like to kind of get away with it on both sides. But, the Jaguars run a lot of zone, and when they're running a lot of zone, they tend to give a lot of cushion, and it allows guys to work underneath routes. They can run crossers. Teams can, you know, run shallow. They can, like you said, that Robbie Anderson is more of the deep ball guy, but are there any of those types of guys where if the Jaguars are playing, you know, a heavy amount of cover three with their guys, their corners playing off the ball a good amount, that can kind of expose the middle of the field and the short areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nunwa's the guy. Nunwa's been a guy the Jets have gone to. He's a guy who can be pretty dynamic with the ball in his hand. So if you know you get him on a short route, he can turn it up the field. And in some ways, he's kind of like a running back once the ball's in his hands. He's difficult to bring down.
Then look, you mentioned running back. That was actually going to bring up my next point. Is transitioning into the run game a little bit. Isaiah Crowell, Bilal Powell are the two running backs there in New York behind an offensive line that, I can't lie, I'm a little unfamiliar with, other than the left tackle, Kelvin Beachum, who played for Jacksonville before Cam Robinson was drafted to replace him about a year and a half or so ago. How does the run game look? Where can they expose teams with the run game and the offensive line as a whole, I guess, both in run blocking and pass protection? Is that in any way a strong suit of the New York Jets as well?
I think the running backs are strong suits. I think the offensive line is a weakness. You know, the new offensive coordinator, we talked about how John Morton is gone. He's replaced by Jeremy Bates, who is a guy who learned at the knee of Mike Shanahan. So you'll see a lot of the principles you'll see in a typical Shanahan offense, where they try and get the zone game working. And you have two backs in Isaiah Crowell and Bilal Powell who can be effective at one cut runners who find the right lane to run through, which is good because this is an offensive line that's not particularly well suited to do much effective, to be honest with you. And I'll be honest, I work at this Jacksonville pass rush. I mean, this is a especially throwing the football. I mean, this looks like a. I mean, this is a tough pass rush the Jets are going to be facing, and this is a line that really struggled quite a. It struggled quite a bit the last 2 weeks to protect its quarterback. I mean, you guys. I mean, you take us through the Jacksonville pass rush right now.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Calais Campbell had a big game this past week with 2 sacks, almost 3. One was called back. And I know he hasn't been getting home on sacks, but Yannick Ngakoue, I'm almost positive, is into the double digits in pressures. They're getting interior pressure as well. So even though they may not have the sack count that they had as early as they did last year, the Jaguars do still have a very, very aggressive pass rush, even when they're only sending 4. So that's definitely going to be something for people to watch. And I think that should just about do it on the Jets' offensive side of the ball, unless Chris has any other questions he wants to throw in there.
Nope, not offensively at least.
Well, then we can go ahead and switch things over as soon as we come back from this short break. We'll let John ask us a couple of questions about the Jaguars, what they can do on offense versus this Jets defense. Final segment, getting any last questions in as we continue this crossover episode of Locked On Jaguars and Jets.
We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more for a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
So now we'll throw it over to John. I'll give my hosting duties up for a segment. John, any questions you have about this Jaguars offense? And really, I mean, defense too, if you want to get any in there, because I'm sure last week's game really did not provide the type of answers that people were expecting them to. So go ahead and ask away, and me and Chris can try and get you as much as we can.
Well, the thing that interests me, the big question I have is, we talked a little bit about Leonard Fournette and his absence earlier. How did the Jaguars change their approach at all when Fournette's not playing?
Chris, you want to get this one, or we can kind of both share it? I know Chris has some strong opinions.
The offense actually gets more creative and actually kind of is a different flavor than vanilla, if you want to just put an analogy out there. When Fournette's out there, it seems that Nathaniel Hackett, the Jaguars offensive coordinator, likes to just do the nice run pass. And if the runs aren't going and the passes aren't going, then the offense sputters out for most of the game and doesn't really accomplish anything. Whereas last week against the Patriots, when Fournette was out, Hackett was probably called his best game of his career. Plays like sweeps, long passes, short passes, 2 running back sets. They used 3rd running back Corey Grant more, who's kind of been their offensive weapon for the past few years. Really just kind of a great change of pace back. They have Yeldon out there for more passing downs. And it just seems, although Fournette is a great running back, it just seems like the offensive play calling just kind of holds themselves back when Fournette is on the field. And I really don't know why, because there's the stigma around Fournette that he can't catch the ball, but he can. But the offense just doesn't seem to really utilize him the way that he can be used. So, I don't know. It's just the Jaguars seem to have a totally different look on offense when Fournette's not on the field.
Now, my opinion is the same as Chris's, and at the same time, it's different in a way. I look back on it, and I meant to tweet this during the game, and I'm kicking myself for not. I had a takeaway, and it was, I think before the Patriots game, even though they played it off like Fournette really had a chance at playing, I think they knew all week he wasn't going to play just based on what the game plan looked like. I think all week leading up to the Titans game, they really thought he was going to play. and planned as if he was going to, and then realized last second he couldn't. Because that looked much more like a game plan, like a vanilla type of game plan that you'd have when Fournette's on the field. However, even though, as Chris says, it's bland when he's out there, it's simple, it works when he's on the field. We've seen that because they still win games with him on the field. They do things with a power type of offense really effectively. These short underneath routes that they ran a ton of against Tennessee that didn't seem to work as well normally open up a lot more when you've got a guy that you know can consistently plug in 4 yards whenever you're getting him the ball. You saw them try and run inside a lot with Corey Grant. Grant's much more of a gadget guy, and you really got a taste of what his vision, like his vision at the line of scrimmage is when he's trying to run these inside plays, and it's nearly non-existent. That's just not his forte, and that's fine because he is more of a utility guy. But it just wasn't something that was working, and it was something they were trying to do, and eventually they just kind of ditched the run game. Despite TJ Yeldon being pretty effective, you could tell that they knew like whatever they were doing running the ball wasn't working, and I do genuinely think it was because they were missing Fournette. If they had him and if he was healthy, that game might have ended totally differently, because when Yeldon was carrying the ball, it was somewhat effective. It just didn't open things up enough because they weren't able to consistently do it. If you have Fournette in there, I think things might have changed a little bit and it could have been a different outcome.
Now, can you guys explain to me the enigma that is Blake Bortles? Like, how does a guy go out and play that great against the Patriots 1 week and then struggle so much the next week? And it seems like that's kind of the story. I just can't figure this guy out.
I, like you, cannot either, and I don't think anybody can. He is an enigma that cannot be explained.
It really is incredible how, and the fan base is almost as bipolar as his playing. 1 week, he is the king of Duval. There was a great hype video made by our media guy, Noah Thomas, over here at Locked On Jaguars after that game from Bortles. And it was the Pool Hall Junkies movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's the Christopher Walken lion speech where it's just like a badass speech, just pumping a dude up, talking about the king of the jungle. And it was edited to be Blake Bortles after his 4-touchdown game against New England. And then he had this game, and rightfully so, people are now calling for his head because it was a poor performance from him. The offense as a whole just completely stuttered, but it was a poor performance from him. It lacked consistency, and I think that's truly where it is that he's just inconsistent. There's not really much of a better way to describe it. There's no way you can diagnose it at this point because it truly is incredible how 1 week he can go from, you know, having a wide, wide open receiver on a 3rd and 3, a yard over the first down marker, just wide open, and the ball sails over his head by at least 3 yards. In the week before, he's hitting throws left, right, center, anywhere you need him to put it, he's putting it. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, this Jacksonville team reminds me a lot of the early Rex Ryan teams with the Jets, because the Rex Ryan teams with the Jets, the early years, they had a couple of playoff runs. They had a great defense. They were built on a solid run game. And I know a lot of your Jaguar fans, forgive me, let me explain this comparison I'm going to make, but it reminds me a little bit of like the early Mark Sanchez days. And I know Sanchez has become a punchline, but you have to remember that he was like a top 5 pick. And there were some really good moments where, like, he'd play a great game, or, you know, he'd lead a clutch drive. He had some great playoff moments. There was a playoff game in Cincinnati where he hit 80% of his passes. There was a divisional game in Foxborough in 2010 when he outplayed Tom Brady through 3 touchdown passes. And I'm not saying Bortles is going to end up like Mark Sanchez, but it's kind of uncanny to me how much this Jacksonville team reminds me of those early Jets teams that were built on defense and the run game, and the quarterback was just a huge wild card from week to week.
I think that makes a ton of sense, actually, when I think about it. Because, yeah, you're right. People will take that as like a punchline type of joke, like comparing him to Mark Sanchez. At the same time, I think Bortles is very much deserving of being the punchline of some jokes at this point. So the parallels are definitely there to be drawn. But in terms of the team as a whole, I think you make a great point. Like, this team is carried by its defense. The offense can have like a star-studded game, like every single bit of it is firing, the run game, the pass game, it can happen. But at the end of the day, like, it's not like the defense is taking any step down when the offense does that. They're just matching each other's production. But when the offense is doing poorly, like this past week against Tennessee, I truly think the defense was lights out. And people were complaining closer to the end when the team started to get tired, which I have no clue how you can blame the defense for getting tired for that offensive performance. But I think that's actually a really great comparison. I hadn't even thought of that about that before, but that might be the one.
So guys, we know a little bit about the backs. Fournette, Yeldon. Who are some of the other playmakers the Jaguars lean on offensively?
Well, one that was very flashy, you probably saw his catch in the Patriots game, who didn't really show up this past week, had a lot of drops, is wide receiver Keelan Cole. Keelan Cole burst onto the scene in training camp for the Jaguars last year with a bunch of star-studded catches, really. That's kind of what got his attention from the fan base through training camp. His first play of the preseason against the Patriots was a 98-yard touchdown that continued to bolster his resume to get onto the roster. And then was kind of quiet going through most of the year, and then the last seven or so games really started to build his NFL resume, if you would. Had almost, I think he had just under 800 yards, a few touchdowns in those last seven games. So I'd say that's definitely probably our wide receiver one at this point, or at least should be. Dante Moncrief's another guy, but he really just seems to be the red zone fade 50-50 guy at this point, almost like a Allen Robinson replacement. But if I had to say, I would say Keelan Cole for sure.
I've not been a fan of the Moncrief signing so far. Chris makes a great point about him in the red zone. That's the only time that he's been worth a damn at this point, honestly. There was the red zone fade touchdown from New England that was a great contested catch. Like, don't get me wrong. That's where his value is right now. But when he's, you know, in between the 20s, I've seen a lot of lazy route running. They're depending on him as a primary read, and he's not getting open on his own. It's just not been very promising for the money that they put into him. You, Chris, nailed it on Keelan Cole. Another guy worth noting is Dede Westbrook. He's really filled the Marquise Lee role well after Lee went down with a torn ACL or whatever it was. They didn't really specify, but I'd assume ACL, in the preseason as the conversion type of guy. The guy that they trust getting those underneath balls to, especially on third down situations, trying to convert. Or even when they're just running their underneath patterns, which they love to do as a West Coast type of passing team. He's the guy that they trust to get the ball. He's got the speed to make a play after he gets the ball in his hands, as well as really crisp in breaking into his routes. He's turning into a really good receiver, a really good possession guy that is going unnoticed as Keelan Cole is out here making big time plays. But I think he's actually providing a ton of value to this passing game when the passing game is clicking.
Well, thanks for the look at the Jacksonville offense, guys. Certainly appreciate it.
And then I'd figure that should pretty much do it. So be sure to follow John and all his work, both with the Locked On Jets podcast as well as Gangrene Nation. You guys can check that out. That's an SB Nation page. As I used to work for BCC, I definitely recommend checking that out. As for Chris and I, you can follow us on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall and at @MistoCristofo. Check out the Locked On Jaguars podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere you can find podcasts, as well as LockedOnJaguars.com. And we will catch up with you guys later in the week.